This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, Hour 3.
Greetings, conversationalists. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson across the United States of America. The phone number is 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program, I'm happy to have you. I have, in the last 24 hours or so, been bombarded by people. They've called the program. They've emailed me. I've gotten messages on social media. Everybody has wanted my reaction to a viral video. I've saved it until now. Let me set the stage for you. In the last 48 hours, a video got posted on TikTok, and it has gone viral. It is of a pastor preaching a sermon in Charlotte, North Carolina. The pastor's name is Lauren Livingston at Central Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's been the pastor there for over 40 years. It's a Baptist church. And Pastor Livingston has thoughts about the new Trump Bible that's come out, you know, the one that has the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence in it and on and on. Well, I got thoughts. People have asked me. I've had a lot of people. And in fact, I can't think of the last time I've had this many people through emails, direct messages, and things like that reach out and ask me to talk about a topic. And this is it. Let me play for you. His name is Lauren Livingston. He's the pastor of Central Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm just going to play you the excerpt that is circulating online. It was pulled off TikTok.
Some of you bring politics into the church. You think that politics is spiritual stuff. Politics is of this world. You think it's your duty to be political about this, that, and the other. No, your duty is to serve the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, body, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Don't be talking to me about my spiritual responsibility to vote. I don't have a spiritual responsibility to vote. I have a civic privilege. Don't be telling me that voting is spiritual. See, that's what happens when you don't read and pray. When you don't read and pray, you say, wow, there's a Bible out now that includes the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Isn't that wonderful? No. No, it's disgusting. It's blasphemous. It's a ploy. Are you kidding me? Some of you are so encouraged by that. Let me tell you something. The gospel is not an American gospel. It is the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. But Pastor, I bought the Bible. Really? You're telling me that you're encouraged because someone took a government U.S. Constitution, a document that says We are of the people, by the people, and for the people. The people, the people, the people. And you have put it right beside the Word of God, which is eternal, unchanging, which says, of Him, by Him, through Him, to Him, from Him are all things. And you're going to put those together and be happy about it? God forbid. Now, you can get mad if you want to, but I'm going to tell you something. If you glory in that kind of thing, you don't have a prayer life. If you glory in that kind of mess, political mess, you do not know what the Word of God says. I'm going to rear back and tell you something. This is not my home. This world is not my home. I've been sent out just like the 70 were sent out. You've been put here and sent out just like the 70 were sent out.
All right. He's marches back and forth across the stage and got the audience. He's, by the way, he's got a packed house. He's been preaching, does two sermons a Sunday for over 40 years at a packed congregation in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was refreshing to hear a Southern evangelical Baptist pastor say that you're bringing politics in. Politics is of the world. It sounds like something I would say, but I do want to call your attention to something with which I disagree. By the way, I sent him a note and just said I was talking about this on radio. I appreciated his boldness and his passion. I do, however, want to take issue with one thing. You've got a civic privilege to vote. It's not spiritual. I disagree in this way. Everything we do is to, if you're a person of faith, is to glorify God. And that's everything, everything. And that includes your civic privileges. So I think you have a stewardship responsibility when it comes to the country. Because if you, as a believer, wish to change things in this country towards what you believe are true based on your faith, your obligation is to go vote for people who do that. And I don't want to discourage anyone from sitting it out. And I think some people could listen to his sermon. And in fact, others have accused him in the past of essentially telling his congregation, don't bother to go vote. You're just passing through. Well, yes, we're passing through. But while we're here, we get to improve it. We get to improve the situation. Now, all of this is to make this larger point. I know a lot of people who are so disgusted with both sides that they say they're not going to go vote. And I tell them the ballot is longer than the presidential race. There are a lot of races, and if you're so disgusted with both parties, you don't see a difference in the candidates, you don't want to vote for one of these octogenarians, your interpretation of your stewardship may be, I'm going to go vote, but I'm going to sit that race out. And if enough people of faith sit it out, maybe one of the parties will realize that there's this pool of people, if we nominate a person of good character, we'll get their vote. That's a level of good stewardship. Now, I'm not going to tell you not to go vote. I'm not going to tell you to vote. I'm going to tell you that some of you may interpret your stewardship differently and say, I got to go stop the Biden administration. I've got to go stop these bad policies. They're advocating things that are anathema to me. They're hostile to people of faith. Trump is a deeply flawed person. I realize the lesser of two evils is still evil, but I got to pick between one of these two major party candidates, and I'm going to go with Trump and not Biden, because look at the policies Biden is pushing. Look at the state of the world that didn't exist when Trump was president. Now we got world war. I'm going to go vote for Trump because Joe Biden is advocating for a massive abortion policies and abortion funding. He wants to kill babies. He wants to support transgenderism. He's going after the church. I got to go vote for Trump. Good stewardship means sometimes I got to hold my nose and pick the guy I don't like because he's better than the other guy. That's on you. But I will tell you, stewardship is a spiritual component. And so I disagree with Lauren Livingston on that. Where I very much agree with him, though, is there are a lot of people who, because of their lack of prayer life, because of their lack of real spiritual commitment, they are willfully dragging politics into churches. Y'all know my own experience with this. We stopped going to church for a time in 2016 because of the number of people who were badgering me just walking from a Sunday school class to a sanctuary. What I will say is what I have found remarkable over the last number of years is that you will find people who purport to be Christians who are willing to justify almost any bad behavior so long as it advances their political team. You will find a lot of people who claim to be Christians who will justify any bad behavior or turn a blind eye to it and refuse to call it out, who don't want to speak up because they're afraid it might hurt their side or the person is on their side, so I'm just going to be quiet. That gets to Pastor Livingston's point. You hadn't read the Bible. You are called to call others, to elevate them, to lift them. You're called to love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, with all your mind, with all your body. You're called to love your neighbor. And there are a lot of people who have begun to worship through a political lens, which is idolatry. So I'm glad he called him out. I'm glad he said this. You know what's so funny is I actually pulled up the whole sermon. And he starts with the real red meat for the conservative crowd, that the people who have changed their views on trans issues and LGBTQ plus issues, that they're the people who haven't been reading the Bible and they hadn't been praying. And the people who can justify abortion, who say they're of faith, hadn't been reading the Bible and they hadn't been praying. And then he pulls out the, and when you bring in politics in the church, you hadn't been reading the Bible and you hadn't been praying, because these are things of the world, not things of God. And so I loved how he reeled everybody in. If you're on the conservative side, he's taking on trans rights. Yeah, he's taking on abortion. Oh, wait, he's taking on people who bring politics into the church as well? Yes, because he's right. I disagree with him on the it's a civic privilege, it's not spiritual, because I do think that if we're to glorify God in everything we do, that also includes our stewardship of our country, and the stewardship of our country and the way it's designed is premised on a vote. And so stewardship can be about voting. Stewardship can be about saying, I'm not going to vote, as a sign that I'm disgusted with it all. Remember in the year 2000, so many evangelicals sat it out. They didn't vote. It was a close race. Bush won by 537 votes in Florida, 534 votes in Florida. He won the Electoral College. He lost the popular vote. And Karl Rove dug into the numbers and realized a massive number of evangelical Christians sat it out. And that was his wake-up call. The Christians saying, I'm not going to vote because I'm disgusted by both sides. It was his wake-up call. So PEPFAR became a thing, helping massive numbers of people very cheaply in Africa to fight HIV/AIDS. Adoption reform became a plank to increase the costs that the government would subsidize for adoption, to streamline adoption, to make it easier for people to adopt. The pro-life plank and recommitment to pro-life judges became a big issue for George W. Bush, because so many Christians decided they would not vote in 2000, they actually got really pro-Christian policies out of the Bush administration, because their stewardship was to say, I can't go for either of these guys. And doesn't that seem wild at the time, Al Gore versus George W. Bush? People forget. The data was there to see. Millions of evangelicals said, I'm not voting for either side. And Bush became more explicit about his faith, talking about his faith, advancing policies that Christians liked, and they overwhelmingly voted for him. Last time a Republican has won the popular vote, in 2004, waves of Christians, people with national security after the war on terror, all those sorts of things, went out to vote for Bush. Sitting out mattered. I'm not telling you to sit out. I am telling you, you've got to decide the stewardship of your vote, and you shouldn't separate that from your spiritual issue. And while I appreciate what Lauren Livingston said and very much agree with a lot of what he said, the thing I would disagree with is that every aspect of your life has a spiritual component to it. You can't separate the spirit from the body. You are one being. That's what Plato wanted, that we are a soul, but we have a body. No, you have a body and a soul because you're a person made in the image of God. And you've got a stewardship obligation as part of your faith to the country you're in here and now, as we are headed home somewhere else. We're here temporarily. But while we're here, we got an obligation to make this place better than it is. You got to decide for yourself, by reading scripture and praying, how that looks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello there. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. How bad is it getting for Joe Biden? CNN has had to fact check him. Poor old Daniel Dale, the fact checker who only seems to ever fact check Republicans, had to actually break a sweat and exert some energy to fact check Joe Biden, who claimed he used to drive an 18-wheeler. This is from CNN. President Joe Biden has revived a debunked tale about his past, his fictional claim he used to drive an 18-wheeler. Biden has repeatedly embellished or invented biographical tidbits. In 2021, he claimed during a tour of a Mack Trucks facility, quote, "I used to drive an 18-wheeler, man. I got to." At a separate 2021 event, he told college students studying Trek technology, quote, "I used to drive a tractor trailer. I only did it for part of a summer, but I got my license anyway." Biden's claims were fact-checked at the time as false, but on Tuesday during a campaign event in Florida, he said it again. A supporter told him, "The only reason I have a pension is because of you." The supporter appeared to be referring to Biden's $36 billion in aid to prevent steep pension cuts. Biden responded, "Well, we did get that done anyway. Besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler." Biden once had a part-time job as driving a school bus, and he spent a night riding in a cargo truck, but not driving it. Next, Biden's going to claim he had a chimpanzee or an orangutan with him to keep a lookout for the cops as he was moonshining in the 18-wheeler. It's only a matter of time before he says that. You know it. CNN has had to fact-check Joe Biden on driving an 18-wheeler because he keeps saying the lie, making them work. Biden does this stuff. Y'all, this is why Joe Biden cannot come out and forcefully denounce anti-Semitism. Because God knows what the man will actually say if he has to make an off-the-cuff denunciation of the anti-Semitism happening on college campuses. He'll probably make a circumcision joke. Undoubtedly, he will make a circumcision joke. He will try to make some wild claim about his own Jewish heritage or how he was an oppressed Palestinian as a kid wearing a towel around his head. It's only a matter of time. This is why they have not allowed him to do it. God knows what he'll say. Americans for Prosperity wants to highlight all the things Joe Biden has said about the economy, and they've done so at Bidenomics.com. You can go educate yourself about the American economy at Bidenomics.com. What you do is you go to Bidenomics.com, you see all of the quotes and claims made about the economy, and then next to them, you see the truth, all the bullet point facts, and it's easy to share. It's easy to educate yourself and your family and friends about what's actually happening in the economy. When politicians say that, well, interest or inflation has gone down and costs are coming down, well, actually, the rate of inflation has gone down, but costs have not come down. It's all documented there. It's easy to see, easy to navigate. It is Bidenomics.com. It's brought to you by our friends at Americans for Prosperity. If you go to AmericansForProsperity.org/Eric today, you can sign up with Americans for Prosperity, learn how to be a world-class grassroots activist in your part of the country. They're organized in over 36 states and growing in the rest as well. They put points on the board for the conservative movement, and you can help them. AmericansForProsperity.org/ERICK. Sign up today. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number, 877-973-7425, should you wish to be on the program. We need to talk about raw politics now. I've saved it for the end. There are warning signs out for Joe Biden, and I need to preface this with kind of the punchline at the very beginning. I've seen several political reporters over the last couple of weeks say, hey, Joe Biden is going up in the polls. What's going on? Why is Joe Biden going up in the polls? Maybe, just maybe, it was his State of the Union. Anyone who really knows anything about politics knows States of the Union speeches are meaningless garbage. We don't need to do them anymore. And yet, there's been this buzz about, oh, well, you know, maybe it's, you know, it's never been the State of the Union. What it's been is about the Trump trial and the start of the Trump trial and all that stuff and a reminder of the issues with Trump. Except once the trial started and Trump's been in the courtroom and everybody's been kind of shut up and Joe Biden's been speaking a lot, trying to dominate the news coverage and take advantage of Trump being in court, it's actually hurt Joe Biden. Keep in mind that historically, over the past number of years, Donald Trump has outperformed his polling. And right now, nationally, in the Real Clear Politics polling average, Donald Trump is up 0.3 of a point. Keep in mind, this is national polling. So Donald Trump tends to overperform his polling, and at the Electoral College level, this matters more. Look at this. It's Real Clear Politics, current polling. Trump is up 2 in Wisconsin, 5 in Arizona, 4 in Georgia, 3 in Michigan, 4.8 in North Carolina, 4.8 in Nevada. He's only behind in Pennsylvania, and that's Biden is up 0.4% in North Carolina. That's not good polling. And now, Bloomberg News has this story, Biden's gains against Trump vanish. President Joe Biden's recent polling bump in key battleground states has mostly evaporated as a deep current of pessimism about the trajectory of the U.S. economy hurts his standing with voters. The April Bloomberg News Morning Consult poll found Biden is ahead in just one of the 7 states most likely to determine the outcome of his matchup with Donald Trump, leading Michigan by 2 percentage points. Biden trails the presumptive GOP nominee slightly in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, and his deficit in Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina is larger. Those results are largely a return to the previous state of the presidential race before a strong State of the Union address appeared to power Biden in March to his best showing in the monthly polling since it began in October, where it still was not good polling, just better than it had been. The reversion comes as poll respondents offered a bleak near-term view of the economy, the issue that has consistently registered as their top concern at the ballot box. A majority of swing state voters see worsening economic conditions in the coming months, with fewer than 1 in 5 say they expect inflation and borrowing costs to be lower by the end of the year. Despite a resilient job market, only 23% of respondents said the employment rate would improve over the same time period. For undecided voters, a group crucial in Biden's efforts to close the gap with Trump, the share who expect improvement on those economic factors was in the single digits. This is bad news for the Democrats. Now, you don't need me to tell you the bad news. It's obvious that we're here now in April, and Trump is in the lead in these swing states. If there are any sorts of national or international incidents that disrupt the markets or disrupt the economy, that's going to be a really big deal for Joe Biden more than it is for Trump. I have a theory. I could be completely wrong, but I have a theory that Trump is baked into the equation. People think they know where they're going to get with Donald Trump, for better or worse. The people who believe that Donald Trump's administration were better than Biden's administration has gone up. That's a warning sign for the Democrats if ever there was one. And so all of the surprises that we get moving forward, all the surprises are surprises that could help or hurt Joe Biden, not Donald Trump. And most of them are things that could hurt Joe Biden. Think about the things that could hurt Biden. I mean, in all honesty, the economy could hurt Joe Biden. An outbreak of war hurts Joe Biden. Turn of the tide negatively in Ukraine for the Ukrainians hurts Joe Biden. Worsening situation in the Middle East hurts Joe Biden. Terrorist attack at home hurts Joe Biden. Another wave of illegal immigrants overrunning the border hurts Joe Biden. Everything, all the surprises could work against Joe Biden. And now you got the situation on college campuses. The situation on the college campuses hurts Joe Biden. because these are progressives, and they're progressives Joe Biden should be clearly denouncing, and he has chosen not to denounce. Joe Biden should be being forceful about the anti-Semitic attacks on college campuses, and he's not. He's kept his mouth shut. Joe Biden has kept his mouth shut because he can't go off script, and his progressives in the White House don't want to give him a script by which he forcefully denounces what's happening on the college campuses. The only way Joe Biden is going to come out and forcefully denounce it without having been ambushed by Fox News is for it to be picked up in the polling. I've mentioned several different stories to you. They're completely unrelated stories. Joe Biden not being aggressive with the anti-Semitic protesters. The Biden administration believing there is a coalition of climate voters who will come out for him. Joe Biden taking on the abortion issue. The Biden administration now restraining access to oil on federal lands. What is clear to me is the way the Biden administration, the way the Biden campaign team have decided to try to win in November is to cobble together individual bits and pieces of coalitions that they will perceive based on single issues outnumber the people who would vote for Trump. So you get the environmentalists, you get the pro-abortion crowd, you get the anti-gun crowd, you get the anti-Semitic crowd, you get, name some other wackadoo coalition partner. You get them all together, the pro-crowd or the anti-crowd together, you get them all together, and they might outnumber the undecided voters, the Republican voters, and the non-white voters who shifted to the GOP. And you're bits and pieces cobbling together a coalition who are single-issue voters getting elected. And then here's the thing for them. I think, personally, Joe Biden actually doesn't care about a lot of their issues. And if he gets re-election, he's never running for office again. And suddenly he can say, well, screw you. Now I'm pro-Israel. But he got their votes to get across the finish line. Or he could say, you know what? To heck with you, Israel. I'm coming out. I support the global intifada. He just wants the votes to win, and he'll do anything necessary. This isn't leadership. It's being led by the polls. Now, the thing that the Democrats are holding on to is this. Every poll has been very consistent. The people most likely to vote in America are people who hate Donald Trump, and they're voting Joe Biden. So what Biden is trying to do is cobble together an ancillary coalition to add to those numbers to stop Donald Trump, and he's hoping he's got the numbers to do it. The people who aren't regular voters, the people who don't generally go vote, they're the ones voting for Trump. If they remember to go vote in November, Trump wins. The white working class, the non-white working class, the middle class, married couples, married white couples, they all support Donald Trump. If they remember to go vote for him in November, he's going to win. Now, the caveat is this. This is the problem for Donald Trump. This is the benefit for Joe Biden. And this is why the Biden administration and the Biden campaign team are encouraged. It's not just that Donald Trump's coalition is less likely to go vote. It's that they all want to vote on election day. The problem with all of them voting on election day is that many of them have jobs, and they will show up before work, and the line will be long, and they'll say, I'll come back later. They forget. Or they go at lunchtime, and the weather's turned bad, and they're like, I'm not standing outside getting wet. I got to go back to work. And then they get off work at 5 o'clock, and they're like, I'm going home, and they forget to go vote. If the Republicans can get them to vote early, if the Republicans can get them to vote absentee, they win. But that takes money to target, takes money to go door to door, and the GOP doesn't have the money right now. And also, the leader of the Republican Party, a guy named Donald Trump, has been very adamant that you should not vote early, and you should not vote on absentee, you should vote on election day. And all of Donald Trump's loyalists, they stand in line, they're going to wear out, and they say, well, look at all these other people here. I don't have to do it. They're going to do it, and they leave, and then he loses. because they didn't vote early. They didn't vote absentee. He dissuaded them from doing it, and his team didn't have the money to put into a ballot harvesting operation. That's the Democrats' strategy. The Democrats' strategy is as much not just cobbling together small pieces of individual groups to build a big coalition to fight Donald Trump on an array of issues, but the Democratic strategy is to bank on the fact that the Republicans are all going to vote on election day, and if the weather's bad or the line is long, they're going to give up and go home. Republicans need to be mindful of this. It is bleedingly obvious. It's so obvious what's happening. It's so obvious what's going on out there. And, I mean, the question is, will Republicans fall for it? Will Trump voters fall for it? If they don't, if they vote early, if they vote absentee, if they get them, Donald Trump really can win this thing. And Democrats who think Donald Trump can't win, they're not paying attention. They're really not, and they need to be. Because it's hilarious to watch their denial. Now, you need to know this is happening right now. It's breaking news. There are massive demonstrations on college campuses around the country in support of the global intifada. University of Southern California, large protests are there. They attempted a protest in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas. But police on horseback and in riot gear showed up and scared the crowd away. And the anti-Semitic protest did not happen on the University of Texas's campus. The University of Southern California, crowds of people wearing the kafaya and the towels and the like, claiming to be with the Intifada and to support Hamas, they're joining. By the way, these are all organized efforts. You need to understand this, that these are left-wing groups that are funding this. These are not spontaneous protests. These are happening because of left-wing groups, often tied to terror groups abroad, are funding these college kids doing this. It's time for Joe Biden to speak up, but he can't because he needs their vote. Bring you more of this when we come back. Right now, I got to tell you, regional banks are having their credit downgraded. Why? A lot of them over mortgaged commercial assets. People haven't returned to the offices. The commercial values are falling, and it's the banks holding the bills, and it's causing them trouble. And many of them are probably going to need a bailout. Swiss America has been sounding the alarm on this and the secret war on cash. They want to give you their report completely for free. All you have to do is call or text my name, Eric Erickson, to 800-289-2646. The all-out war on cash includes digital forms of currency. It's spreading. Swiss America wants to teach you how to save your hard-earned assets right now. Call them or text them my name, Eric Erickson, to 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646. The report, Secret War on Cash Report, it is completely free from Swiss America. Call them or text them, 800-289-2646, 800-289-2646. Message and data rates may apply. Well, you want a sense of what campus leadership looks like? You got to go to the University of Texas. Demonstrators attempted to demonstrate there, and they've all been chased away by police. Compare that to the University of Southern California, where there are now look like riots happening on campus. The riot police have been called out. This is the letter the dean of students at the University of Texas sent to the Palestine Solidarity Committee. Let me read you this. The University of Texas at Austin must first and foremost act to protect our educational mission, allowing the activities and operations that support our mission to proceed. At the same time, we are steadfast in our support of free speech. Our policies and rules help define the lines between these objectives and shape our response to planned protests. The Palestine Solidarity Committee student organization's event, Popular University for Gaza, which is planned for tomorrow, has declared intent to violate our policies and rules and disrupt our campus operations. Such disruptions are never allowed and are especially damaging while our students prepare for the end of the semester and final exams. For these reasons, this event may not proceed as planned. Simply put, the University of Texas at Austin will not allow the campus to be taken and protesters to derail our mission in ways that groups affiliated with your national organization have accomplished elsewhere. And now in bold print, the dean puts this. Please be advised that you are not permitted to hold your event on the university campus. Any event to do so will subject your organization and its attending members to discipline, including suspension under the institutional rules. Individuals not affiliated with the university and attempting to attend this event will be directed to leave campus. Refusal to comply may result in arrest. That's an impressive statement. Very firm. When students showed up at the University of Texas today and attempted to protest, they found that police were there on horseback and in riot gear, daring them to set foot on the lawn to protest. Meanwhile, at the University of Southern California, you got a bunch of people there covering their faces trying to protest. Now, here's something that I find very notable. I saw this happen on CNN a little while ago. Is they're interviewing ethnically Jewish students who are participating in the protests, trying to essentially say, by the way, this is a well-known, well-documented propaganda tool by left-wing activists. You get those people there to, and you say, how can you say it's anti-Semitic? Look, we're Jewish people. Never mind what the people behind them are chanting. There are always willful idiots, always, and the left always needs to use willful idiots. Now, the University of Southern California, the crowds are growing with the people. They got their heads wrapped in the cafes and the towels and the like, and caps and COVID masks on to try to hide themselves, hide their identities. The police have showed up. This situation is continuing to escalate at the University of Southern California. You've got the situation at Columbia, the situation at MIT and Harvard, Brown, so many more. You do not have the situation of the SEC. You do not have these situations at SEC schools and very few in ACC schools. The Ivy League is overrun with them. A lot of the Big Ten is overrun with them. All the Big Ten, I guess they're kind of dying off at this point. Everybody's going elsewhere. But you don't have this in the SEC. And I'm starting to wonder if Jewish students and others who valued Ivy League degrees are going to realize it's not worth it going to these places where the left has taken over. It's also, I think, extremely notable that Columbia University is one of the very few Ivy League institutions that has refused to bring back standardized tests as a requirement. Columbia has thus far dragged its feet and I'm sure has allowed in a lot of underqualified students, and the value of a degree at Columbia is probably going to decline over time. Its reputational integrity is already sinking. But man, the SEC schools, go to LSU, go to the University of Georgia, go to Alabama, go to Auburn, go to the University of Florida where Ben Sasse is, go to Vandy. Vandy expelled the protesters. God bless them. Their football team may suck, but their discipline is incredible. You got lots of great schools. You can even go to Missouri now. That makes no sense to me how Missouri's in the SEC, but nonetheless, you can go there too. And you're not going to have the Hamas terrorist backers dominating college campus. Where you go to college matters. You can get a good degree or you can go to the Ivy League, but you can't get a good degree at the Ivy League these days because the terrorists are in charge and the anti-Semites are on the college corridors of power. Your choice, people. Think about it as your college admissions come due here soon. All right, I'm out of time. Y'all have a great rest of the day. I will talk to you tomorrow.